Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A grain, all right.
Just remember that.
And a small bit of a needle there.
Now,
come on, Mayo, you've
got to
get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen, and now they're really roaring. And I can tell you, there won't be a cold milk cow declare for at least a week.
Hello, everyone. You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show. My name is Paul Rouse, and I'm joined by the former Armagh footballer, Oisín McConville, and by the former Dublin footballer and coach, Jason Sherlock. Jason, you're going to have to be gentle today. There's an Armagh man who's very tender and an Offaly man who's not much better. But thank you very much for joining us. Did you see, did you watch Donegal, Armagh?
I did. There was a lot of sport on. Obviously, it was very, it feels very early in the year, but obviously with the good weather and the good weekend, you certainly got that flavour of championship football. And yeah, there were some great games, and obviously we'll go into detail about a few. But I suppose my kind of reflection I had on the weekend, like for every Donegal, there's an Armagh, for every Wexford, there's an Offaly, for every Wicklow, there's a Laois. It's such a shame. And I think it reinforces that idea about a league championship format, because like whatever the results, the scoreboard isn't the only judge of success. And each and every one of those teams had put in the same amount of effort to prepare and perform yesterday. And for some teams, it didn't. And it's just a shame that a lot of those teams now will be judged by either a great win or a bad loss. And I suppose there's something in that to unlock and unravel. But certainly from a sporting perspective, as a supporter, it was great to see championship football.
Oisín, that point is interesting, isn't it? That there's a huge amount of effort gone in. I was listening to Jarlett Burns on Radio na Gaeltachta yesterday evening, and he was talking about the enormous efforts that had been made in Armagh to prepare for this season. And it looks like a huge amount of work was done in the autumn and early winter and into the thing, and they hit the ground running in the league, and they looked really flat yesterday.
Yeah, they did, and that's a good point. I think, you know, I was saying to you, Paul, a couple of weeks ago that in GAA it's quite simple. The way we set the bar, it's if you win the game, you're great, and if you lose, you're awful, and there's no real sense of what's going on in between. I just feel as if maybe I'm too close to the Armagh thing, you know, in that. I do see a lot of, I still see a lot of positives in, you know, in what has been going on. Having thought about the match, it took me an hour and 40 minutes to travel to Ballybuffet yesterday, and it took me 3 hours and 20 minutes to come home. I was in the car, I was on my own. Nobody really wanted to talk to me. I didn't really want to talk to them, so I wasn't on the phone, and it was just, I was there with my own thoughts. And by the time I got to the house, it was a lot more positive, because I think the nuts and bolts, I definitely think the nuts and bolts are there. I couldn't have said that in previous years. I've had some significant wins this year, but I do understand that you have to perform on championship day, and that's the unforgiving thing about championship football. And yesterday they give themselves a mountain to climb, you know, by like with 25 minutes gone, I couldn't have been any happier. It was 5 each. And Armagh weren't playing well, and I thought, you know, Armagh are going to have a purple patch. And they had that purple patch after half-time. They had 11 minutes of complete dominance. And yet Donegal had 1-1 on the board, and we had nothing. And that sort of summed up, you know, how the game went for Armagh. But, you know, there's a lot in that as far as, you know, it's there was a sense yesterday from a lot of Armagh supporters leaving that we hadn't done ourselves justice. It's 6 weeks sitting on your hands in order to get going again. And that would not be ideal. As far as, you know, meaningful games, how many are you going to get? You know, there's a thing now where you probably don't want to play somebody who you could draw. And if you play Division 3, Division 4 teams who are in the Talchin Cup, you might not get the run out that you want, or the quality of the run out you want. So the system is not ideal, but it's what we have at the minute, and we're going to have to try and make the most of it, you know.
Jason, Dublin, when you were involved from 2015 onwards, were brilliant at timing performances for exactly when they were needed. If you were involved with Armagh now today, would you step back for a couple of weeks? Would you cut the panel loose for a couple of weeks and then come back to it? Because it's 6 weeks before they will play in the qualifiers.
It's definitely an option. Obviously, not being close with it, it's hard to know what it's like up there in terms of the time they're spending together or time away. And I think regardless of what that what decision is, because I think whether you win or lose, you obviously have to figure out when you need to reconvene and get back on the horse. I think like today, there'll be a lot of head scratching, and I think there'll be that kind of quest for identity. And it coming out of a game like that from both sides, you will try to understand your identity a bit more. And my observation looking at both games, and like you watch Donegal and Armagh, and it's quite regimental in terms of the tactics. It's quite suffocating even to watch. And then there's a little bit of contrast then when you watch Galway and Mayo. Tactically, they might be similar, but there's just an element of a bit more freedom for whatever reason. I'm not saying that's better or worse for their performance, but just that's the perception. And I just felt from a Donegal perspective yesterday, they had a bit more creativity about them. I think they just, whatever way Armagh were going to play, they had a way to do that. Now, a lot of that depends on players. And you mentioned the Dublin team I was involved with. We had a lot of game changers. We had a lot of guys that could win a game. And I suppose that helps. But certainly yesterday, I just felt that Donegal had the answers to whatever the challenge was. Armagh have proven in the league that they have a lot of answers, and they can provide a lot of challenges to all opposition. So to your question, Paul, it's about not being too high or too low based on the scoreboard. It's about reevaluating and seeing how you can plot to be better the next day. Because the reality is, as Oisin says, you don't know who you're going to get. And the game plan, obviously, that Armagh put yesterday wasn't good enough to win that game. But who knows what opposition or what tactics you might need the next day. I certainly felt that in the Galway Mayo game. I think it was the tactics to win the game, but that's not necessarily going to be the tactics they will need for their next challenge or challenges down the road. So again, it's a really interesting part. You do need teams that I suppose are comfortable with their own identity, and that they have that kind of autonomy and creativity to figure out the challenge that's presented to them from day from day. And I think the key now for all the teams that lost yesterday, that this doesn't derail their season completely. You know, it's about kind of reassess and reflect. And as Oisin said, things aren't as bad. They're never as bad as you think they are straight after defeat. But it's what you can take in terms of the positive stuff, and what can you use then to improve your performance based on the things that didn't work well.
So that's right. It's fine to take the positives. But Oisin, what are the positives for Armagh from yesterday? Like, I thought Armagh were outplayed all over the field yesterday. I thought Donegal outran them. I thought they outthought them. I thought Jason's right. They created more chances. Have Donegal announced themselves now as the team that you thought they were going to be over the last couple of years? Have they made that big step forward?
I'll tell you what I thought about Donegal first of all yesterday. I thought they look very comfortable in their own skin. They look very comfortable. Like Jason's talking about identity, they looked comfortable in the way they were going about things yesterday. I still think defensively they can be got at in a huge way. But they look very comfortable in the fact that they may give up some scoring chances. They look very comfortable in the fact that they were when they pressed Armagh's kick out and it went 50-50, they seemed very comfortable that they were going to win the ball. And they won 8 out of 13 of Armagh's long kickouts in the first half. And I didn't think that would be a position that Armagh were in, because I think Armagh done really well in that area and through the league, even against, you know, the tougher opponents, even against the likes of Mayo and that. I thought, you know, that was an area that we were quite comfortable in, and yet we were cleaned out in it yesterday. So Donegal look back to a team who, like, if you remember the McGuinness era when they were unapologetic about the way they played, really, and but everybody knew exactly what their job was. That's sort of the way it felt yesterday. It was that, you know, regardless of how much Armagh were going to dominate the ball, even for the first, as I say, 10 minutes of that second half, regardless of what decisions were going to go against them, they seemed to be, as I say, comfortable in the fact that they were going to stick to what they knew. I even seen a, probably a maturity in, and I know it might be ridiculous to say, but even a more mature performance from the likes of Murphy and McBrady, who probably just haven't been hitting the heights that they have done in previous years, but look back to the best yesterday, and probably especially McBrady, because McBrady has a tendency, if he's not in the game, to have that wild one, and he didn't do that yesterday, and he didn't look a frustrated. That much of a frustrated figure like I have seen him in the past when he hasn't been able to come in the loop and get that shot away. Eventually he got one towards the end, and I'm pretty sure he likes one of them every game, but the patience that he showed and the maturity that he showed, and I thought they're young lads. I thought Mogan was very good for them, give them a huge amount of energy, and McHugh the same. And if you flip that to Armagh, I think the one of the biggest thing for me was the energy levels. I didn't think the energy levels were where they should have been at.
In the crowd? You know, you were there just for people who didn't see it. You were there on BBC's coverage. You were in. It looked like a brilliant place to watch a match for them.
Perfect.
And you're in the middle of crowd. You're with Martin McHugh and Peter Canavan. Do you chat together when the game is going on?
We normally would if it was two teams that there was nobody at any, you know, skin in. But obviously Martin McHugh had a son playing. I had three nephews on the panel, so there was a wee bit of an edge to it yesterday, I suppose. there was a few decisions being questioned, and we had a few variables between ourselves. Nothing that can't be sorted out over the period of the next 5 or 6 years, but and a little bit of couples counselling. But the thing about the crowd beforehand was, there was a serious buzz around, because I had been in Corrigan Park the day before, and the crowd literally didn't come in until 10 minutes before the game started. But there was a real buzz. I arrived in Ballybofey about 11 o'clock, and you could sense it was one of those real challenges. It was almost like as if you were in Clones. It was one of those real challenges. A lot of people had already got there. They were sitting around or having a drink or a tea or whatever they were having, and it was an atmosphere was building. But see, when they got into the ground, I noticed there was a real nervous. Now, both sets of supporters seemed really nervous about what was going to happen. And I felt as if both of them wanted an opportunity to get themselves into the game, supporters-wise. You know what I mean? So they could really get behind their team. But because of the tempo that the game was played at, that was difficult early on. Now, those 3 points that Donegal reeled off at the end of the first half give them the opportunity to get off for a little bit more. But I felt as if we never gave the Armagh supporters a chance to get involved. And that nearly happened at the start of the second half, but just didn't quite materialise. So I just felt their energy, Armagh's energy levels just weren't real. They felt a little bit flat. But look, if you're not winning that initial ball in the middle of the field and you're not getting any go-forward ball, especially for the first half, it's gonna feel flat. You're gonna feel as if your backs are to the wall, and Armagh's backs were to the wall for a considerable amount of that time. Yet, as I say, 25 minutes, I looked at the scoreboard and I said, I'm really happy with the way this has gone.
I thought the atmosphere in Castlebar was fantastic, Jason, as well, and it was quite stunning to see the celebrations of the Galway management and the Galway players and indeed the Galway supporters after the game. It felt like a huge win for Galway yesterday.
Yeah, and so it should. You know, this is championship football, and obviously in terms of the life of that management team, it was obviously a key stepping stone on their journey, because obviously particularly in their last two games, it hadn't gone their way. And then if you factor in their recent games against Mayo as well. So it definitely was a game that meant an awful lot, and you could see that. And again, that brings its own challenges as well. And I think Mr. Joyce was very, very quick in saying it after the game about we'll enjoy tonight, but we need to regroup straight away for 2 weeks' time. And that again is part of the challenge. And when you ask about kind of what are the positives you take out of a game, in a lot of ways it can be a lot more positive on the losing side, because now you know you're exposed in terms of where the areas to work on are. So for example, if it's a ball around the middle of the field, you have something to work on and go after. Whereas sometimes now, if you've won, there's an expectation that that's going to happen all the time. And even if you take Donegal, McGee, he went off injured, he was very key very early in that game. Is he even going to be fit the next day? I saw Comer was kind of limping as well, big player for Galway. So again, these teams, I suppose, until they do it game after game, there's still going to be question marks about them. And definitely I would see that.
I think that point is really important, that point that you find your work-ons to it. So I want to put this to you about Mayo. Mayo won the kick-out contest with Galway. They gave away fewer turnovers during the game than Galway. They conceded fewer frees than Galway. They had more attacks. They had 40 attacks to Galway's 27. They had more shots, 31 to 22. So if we leave aside the scoreboard for a second, the key differential here is really, really simple. Mayo lost the match because they had a 52% conversion rate on their shooting. Galway's conversion rate was 68%. So when, like, you've analysed Mayo football, played against them year after year for Dublin, right at the cusp of this team, it seems that they continue to fall short on the same thing.
Yeah, but I also see a lot of admirable qualities about Mayo. The fact that they're still in the conversation, they're still so prominent after the years of coming so close and being on the wrong end of defeats. The fact that they got a trimming in the league final and they're still back with 5 minutes to go, back against the wall, and they're still coming forward. There's something that you would love to have in any DNA of a team. But yeah, when you talk about the tactical, I suppose, elements to win a game, like, you obviously are drawn to that in terms of that kind of conversion and execution piece. It does bring up another kind of factor, because again, there's no right or wrong way to play the game of football, and there's a big emphasis, obviously, aesthetically we love an open flowing game and attacking game, but like, as we know, it's not about the beauty of how you play, it's about getting results. And there's such an opportunity cost with a lot of things you do from a tactical point of view. And I think Galway, they set up a certain way yesterday, and I'm sure if they had looked at the kind of the stats before the game, they probably would have been happy with that, because they were going to concede kick out, they were going to concede the kick, they were going to sit back, they were going to force Mayo to kick from distance. So again, sometimes the stats, they can be misleading as well. And I think the challenge for a Mayo team is always going to be there, that they're always going to be questioned and challenged until they finally break through the door, which they've been so close to do. I think obviously when they look back at the video, it's going to be that third quarter in particular where they're going to look back and kind of question the execution of that part of the play. And I don't know what the answer is with Mayo. They're a team based on emotion, and I think that can be a challenge. It brings its own challenges. Oisín played against my Dublin team that were built on an emotion, and it was a very easy team to kind of stop and stifle. And Mayo have to kind of balance that kind of playing with emotion, playing that kind of unscripted football, but then getting the points on the board, getting the scores on the board to win a game. And again, for most teams, you would probably write them off for the rest of the year. But with Mayo, you just don't know. I would never write them off.
They went 22 minutes in the second half yesterday without scoring, and they looked absolutely buried with a couple of minutes left. And Galway just were clinical, just moved it. Every time they went forward, they looked like they were going to score. And you thought Mayo were done. And you're right, like, Mayo's qualities are, they're undeniable. The honesty, the effort, they never stop trying. They absolutely never stop trying, and they keep at it. But it seems to me still, if you keep failing in the same way, there's an issue here. Do you think the Mayo forwards, how would you coach them differently than they are being coached? Or is there things that you would ask them? Are there things that you would ask them to do differently just from looking at the matches?
Yeah, well, I think, holistically, though, I think this thing about, oh, actually, you'll never win with them, but what's the option? You know, like, we don't have a transfer market. Like, the players are investing and sacrificing so much of their time to be the best that they can be, and that's so admirable. I think what the Mayo have done, and I think they played the most new players in the league this year, like, so they have tried to transition and tried to give game time. It definitely was apparent that injuries have impacted where they were yesterday in terms of the players that either didn't play or that got injured on the game. There was a couple of guys only back as well. So that's a factor as well. So I think in that sense, there's a lot of positives for Mayo over the next 6 weeks that they can increase their performance. I think then going back to the actual specifics of their offensive play, again, they've some great people in there. They've played in big games and they know what the challenges are. So I think my perception of Mayo is sometimes your biggest strength can be your biggest challenge. And what I mean by that, if you take the Mayo half back line as an offensive threat, they're great carrying the ball, they're great going forward. But as myself and Oisin know, if you have a halfback that is running with the ball, it means that you're going to have less space and it's going to be harder for you to get on ball. So again, I've always been challenged with that from a Mayo perspective, not even Mayo, just in football in general, that if you've got guys that are coming from the back, it creates challenges then for your forwards to get free. And obviously you only had to look at the high behind last night and you could see that Galway had two extra players as well anyway, which makes it challenging. So I suppose it is tough. I think that the biggest thing is to reassure and kind of bring confidence in your preparation. At the end of the day, all you can do is prepare to put the ball over when it counts. And as a coach, that's all you can do. All you can do is empower your players to have the tactical and technical belief and ability to put the ball over when it counts. And then it's over to them. So I don't think there'll be any magic sauce for May over the next 6 weeks. It's just a case of regrounding themselves again and going at it, which, as they've shown in the past, they're well capable of doing.
So if we look at your specific story, though, from when you burst onto the scene first, you're a game breaker by being a goal scorer and your movement was incredible. By the time you finished, though, you had become an excellent kicker of the ball and from a kind of a point scorer. How did you do that?
Well, I wanted to be better. I wanted to be a better footballer first and foremost. So again, when I started playing with the senior football team, I'd played with the Dublin minor team before that, and I hadn't really played Gaelic football regularly up to then. So I just wanted to be a better footballer. And believe me, I had a lot of lessons in terms of defeats. So every time you got a defeat, you had to come back better. And obviously trying to score and be able to kick the ball either for scoring or passing, that was something that I wanted to invest time in. And I think even as a player, it wasn't about, like, there's two elements. It's how you can be a better individual player, but also how can you make your teammates better. And I think the development of our team, I was lucky when I started, I was playing with some really top class quality players, tried and tested, that I was a luxury. They were able to perform with me being on the pitch. Whereas by the time I was kind of finishing, I felt I needed to help kind of get the likes of Alan Brogan or Bernard Brogan on the ball. So that was probably more of the tactical development or the team kind of development I had in my head. And again, it's no different than any challenge of any player trying to be the best player they are, but also then trying to make their team better and get them to perform to the best of their ability.
And then specifically in terms of Dublin's forward play, did you go into individuals and try and improve their kicking? Or did you go into individuals and improve their decision-making? How did you do this?
If any coach thinks they do something, I'd question it. You know, ultimately it's down to players and it's their care and it's, I suppose, their intelligence and their belief and motivation to become better. Certainly, you'd like to think as a coach, you can maybe point out things in terms of what might assist, or you might get used to how a player prepares and how they do things well and what happens when they do well. And you might be able to kind of shine that mirror at them to reassure them and kind of build that confidence and faith in what they do. But again, I think the biggest compliment I would have for the guys that I worked with is that no one was bigger than the team. They wanted Dublin to perform and they wanted to take the best option for Dublin. And I think what I love about what I've seen of Donegal, and it isn't a coincidence, that goal yesterday, the hand pass goal in, that's something they've done regularly, consistently now over the last few years. And it's probably it aligns with my philosophy about doing what's the right option for the team. And I think it's a great trait. I think it's a great attribute to have in your team. And even they got one, if you look at Langan's point at the end, and I know it's so hard when you're in front of a goalie and you see the whites of his eyes and you can see the headlines. If he pauses for another second, he has a hand, a little layoff to his right hand side, and it's another team goal. So again, as a coach, I suppose it's trying to make a player understand how, okay, yeah, we want you to be the best you can be, but how can you actually make our team perform even better?
Oisín, do Galway look like they're a team who could be dangerous through the rest of this championship? And I mean by dangerous, All-Ireland semi-finalists, All-Ireland finalists, and so on.
Dangerous if they keep progressing, Paul. I think there's still a good body of work to be done with them. I think Yasser will help them because I think it will. I think it'll help them it'll help the management team, and as a result of that, that will help the players, because it's easier to say something when it's worked. And I think that has been the. I think that's been a problem in Galway is really committing to a certain way of playing, even if it's only the nuts and bolts of that or the nucleus of what they want to do, and they will tweak and they will change things and they may not necessarily play in the exact same way, but they're going to come up against different challenges, when teams are going to press them, Damien Comer seemed to be the out ball on a lot of occasions for them. So I still think they have work to do winning that initial possession when they are pressed heavily. So I still think there's a good body of work to be done as far as Galway are concerned, but they're dangerous because if you have forwards who can convert, who think clearly when they're under pressure and are able to get scores out of very, very little, create things, are unselfish, I think they're a dangerous proposition, but I still think they have a there's a bit of work to be done in all of them to be real challengers.
If we move to the Leinster Championship, Jason, Dublin make their seasonal bow this weekend away to Wexford. How do you rate where Dublin are at the moment?
It's hard to know. I think in terms of the performances of the league, they were obviously Armagh the first day of the league showed a big gulf in terms of the performance that day, and I suppose slowly Dublin kind of improved up until the last day when I think there was this kind of acceptance that Dublin were going to go up to Clonus and get a win. But from knowing from experience in the height of our powers, we knew how hard it would have been to go up to Clonus and get a victory up there in the National League. So it's obviously from a supporter's point of view, there's a lot of questions. I think as players, it must be a great place to be. It's hard to believe that Dublin could be kind of coming under the radar, and that's how I feel potentially they could position this. Obviously, there's a lot of questions being asked about them, but at the end of the day, they've a lot of top quality players that have been there and done that. And I think if you put the best Dublin 15 down on paper versus any other team, they'll certainly match up quite well. So the challenge is for those guys is if they can kind of embrace the challenge that they have. It's not about what they've done in the past. It's, to be honest, it's not even what they've done in the league. It's about now, can they get the focus, can they get the preparation right for what they need over the next few months? And in a lot of ways, it's set up nicely for them to prove a lot of people wrong and the doubters wrong. So I suppose I'll be interested to see how they embrace that challenge. And it's an interesting one starting off against Wexford. I'm sure it's not ideal for you, Paul, but like Wexford last year, I think they played them, and I think the performance that year, it wasn't great from a Dublin perspective, and it kind of set the tone for the rest of the year. So in a lot of ways, they've a very similar challenge, and it will be a good gauge straight away to see what level they're at, and it should give us some signs for the championship ahead.
So I met Rory O'Carroll out in UCD one day when he was Dublin were maybe in year two of the five in a row team, and it was just before the first round of a Leinster football championship, and Dublin were I can't remember which county they were due to demolish the following weekend, but it was quite clear that it was going to be a significant victory. And I was asking Rory about how do you prepare for a match like that? How do you, what's your ambition here? What do you think you're going to win by? And he was a no. He was really clear about a really clear head. It's not about anything other than the process. And, you know, we laughed. I kind of thought I was trying to wind him, you know, trying to get a bit of information out of him and saying, no, this process, what is that process?
I suppose the process, it was about, well, one, we had the opportunity to represent Dublin. And I think for any county team, that kind of higher purpose, that connection with what you're doing is so important. And that was the starting point. Why were we there? And we were there to kind of perform in that jersey that not many people have a chance to do. I think the second thing was that this isn't a switch. You can't just go from not performing to rocking into an All-Ireland quarterfinal. So it was about performance, and it was always about performance, be it a National League game, a training session, a Leinster Championship game. It was about performance. And I suppose we were lucky that it was so competitive that players knew that this wasn't about I can kind of mind myself and get ready for the next game. It was about performing, because if they didn't perform, there was going to be questions asked, and it was a great environment to be. So again, I very similar to what Rory would say, we prepared like it was our last game. It was our next game. It could be our last game. And that's the way we looked at it. And even from a coaching perspective, I used to love looking back at some of those games. Of course, you like in the Leinster Championship games, you might get 2 minutes on the Sunday game or whatever. But there was some really good football that we played, that we prepared for and practiced, that, again, we were able to extenuate the positives of our preparation. We were also able to challenge for things that we didn't do as well in those games. Yet, going back to my point about the scoreboards, people might have seen a scoreboard being one-sided and thought, well, sure, there was no value in that. So I suppose from a Dublin perspective at that time, that's what the process was for us. It was about just keeping in the present and appreciating and respecting the opportunity that we had.
Jason, I remember a league final where Philly McMahon had gone full length of the field and he'd had a shot with the outside of his boot, which probably wasn't his forte, but Dave McConnelly shortly after that was in under the Hogan stand playing in the hill, and he had one with the outside of his left boot. And I seen Cluxton was winning quite comfortably. And I don't probably have the vocabulary, but apoplectic is a word that I would have used, but he wasn't happy anyway. And the next thing, the two boys were taken off. And is that the sort of standards or the sort of, you know, stuff that you're talking about when you think about trying to maintain those standards and getting small things out of games like that?
Yeah, well, like I don't recall it to the exact moments, but I've no doubt it happened. And I think, yeah, it would be a snapshot of, I suppose, what we prided ourselves on. And I suppose everyone knew their role. And going back to what I said earlier, it was about doing the taking the best option for the team at that moment. And again, it wasn't about, we weren't prescriptive in terms of you must do that or you can only kick from here or there. We trusted, we respected, we empowered the players to take what they felt was the best option for the team at that given time. Now, again, sometimes if guys didn't take those options, I suppose it wouldn't, it would only be appropriate that we actioned accordingly, because then how can you buy that, get that buy-in and that consistency if we don't put value on what we feel is the right option for the team? So that might have been an example of it, but certainly, yeah, the standards that those guys play to and the respect they had for each other was great. It made things a lot easier for us in terms of they kind of self-policed what were the right things that were meant to happen. And again, like, you go back to Stephen, and I know obviously he hasn't been around the last couple of years, it's such a shame as a supporter not to be able to see him and see what he does, but certainly from a person, an individual who cares as a leader, to take a guy out of any environment like that is obviously a big loss to have.
I should say, by the way, that in terms of what Rory O'Carroll was saying, he was talking exactly about that, about the importance of performance and not thinking about the result, but about preparation, doing what it was right and treating every minute of the match on its own terms. It wasn't intended as jargon. Within that sense, this idea though that Dublin would train the way you play. The primacy, it seems to me, a huge premium was put on Dublin training on skills development. Is that a perception? Is that something that you did? Did you do walkthroughs on the field with players as well? Or was it very much unscripted?
No, I think, and again, you pick up things all over the place. And obviously, Jim, like, there's a lot of articles about how where he looked for inspiration and for synergies in sports. And like one that I picked up was from American football point of view, the value of a good coach is the coach that can put his players in different situations on the training pitch to prepare them for the real match. So again, the reality of Dublin, particularly in Leinster, is we mightn't have gotten the challenges that, let's say, Donegal or Armagh or Mayo or Galway got yesterday. So we had to build that into our preparation in our training sessions. And again, how could we, I suppose, take our players out of comfort zones? How could we build in that resilience and that kind of appreciation for when the time comes that they do take, that they won, they see what the challenge is, that whatever that challenge is presented, and then they understand what are the tools to unlock that challenge. So that was the really cool thing about, I suppose, coaching a team like that, that we were able to come and kind of craft challenges for them in terms of situations that they might face and encounter. And then what was really, nice is when those situations happened, which they did in games, like as much as Dublin were dominant for a number of years, there were a lot of games, particularly the later games, that could have gone either way. And it was very satisfying to see players kind of understanding what was in front of them and then figuring it out for themselves. So to your question, Paul, yeah, we kind of threw everything at it in terms of when you look at the technical preparation, the tactical, the physical piece, we looked at all of those kind of parts of the game and saw how we could challenge our players and how we could prepare them. But the biggest part was the psychological piece. It's between the years. That to me, I think, is the difference between the good and the great. And it's the guys that can understand and appreciate what's in front of them, what is required. The likes of the Michael Murphy, when he's able to put that hand pass in front of the guy, the like of yesterday Shane Walsh being able to kick the 345s when they're under pressure. Like, it's having the mindset to be able to execute the skill at the time. That to me is the real kind of the fine line between the good and the great.
Do you think Dublin will win the All-Ireland this year?
I think they have the capability of winning it. I've dealt with enough of those players to know the calibre of them and know the capability of them. I think what this is, and I suppose in a lot of ways, I'm disappointed that we never got the kind of challenge from a defeat perspective. We won. I was only involved for five championships, and we won them all. So
there's a lot of people disappointed you didn't get that.
Well, I appreciate that, but I suppose in my selfish coaching way, because I do feel that defeat, like that kind of, as Oisin said there, like that point of leaving a game in Ballybofey yesterday and having to scratch your head and kind of question yourself, question your values, question everything you've done. Like, there's so much growth in that. You do need to be humble. Like, it is a game at the end of the day. There's no guarantee any day you go out. So I think to have that opportunity to be able to say, right, there's no expectation here. There's no divine right that we're going to win. That's a great place to be. So I think the challenge, and obviously we won't know what's gone on behind the scenes now, but the challenge is how the preparation has gone since the league and moving into the championship, to see if they are moving the right way. But certainly, to your question, have they the capability of winning All Ireland? Absolutely.
You never lost a championship match as a coach with Dublin.
But I lost a lot as a player, my more than my fair share.
So the league final against Kerry is the only thing that comes to mind where I think was a serious day, and you lost by a point, if I remember correctly. How did you go about dealing with that?
And we probably didn't deserve it, but Dean had a free kick at the end that I think hit the post, and to be fair, Dean as a player, I think he took a lot of learnings out of that as well. But I think as a management team, it kind of annoyed us. It certainly grounded us, and definitely looking back on it, it's tough, because to have an opportunity, I think it was to win four or five leagues at the time in a row, like that doesn't happen overnight. That takes a lot of accumulative kind of performances. But the one thing I would say, looking back on it, without that defeat, I don't think as a coaching team and as a management team, we would have gone on and kind of prepared as well as we did in championship without that defeat. So again, it goes back to that point that there's so much learnings from a defeat and what you do. If you can reflect on it honestly and critically amongst yourselves and extract the stuff that you need to bring with you moving forward.
We've discussed the Dublin team, that the five, six in a row team, quite a lot, obviously, over the last couple of years. And one of the discussions we have over is who is the key player on that team outside of the goalkeeper. So I'll ask you the question, who is the key player on that team outside of the goalkeeper?
Number 36 is the key player. Like, and that will go to even the backroom team, because you are only as strong as your weakest link. And I think the culture that Jim kind of engineered was that everyone felt that they had a part to play. So it's a bit like that NASA saying in The Caretaker, what do you do? I help put people on the moon. I think that was the philosophy, that was the culture that we had in Dublin, that we all felt we had a part to assist and support the performance. Because if at any stage that team thought it was about one or two players, we were in trouble. And again, I think it's to Jim's credit. Like, I know people criticize and say, yeah, sure, you had the strength and depth in the panel, which is absolutely fair. We had a lot of highly talented players. But at the same time, we had those players that were willing to sacrifice their own game and their own ego to come on and do a job, be it 70 minutes or 70 seconds. And I think to your question, I think, every player was as important as each other.
Was there ever a row in the camp?
Absolutely. You'd need that. You wouldn't learn, you wouldn't grow if there wasn't. And I think sometimes victories can kind of, deflect that, because we think everything is going well. So that's why it's important that you do challenge performances, challenge the victories as much as the defeats, because you do need reality. You don't want to be kind of fixated on the scoreboard. So I think constructive conflict is good. And I think that challenges that probe. So certainly I think any successful team, you need an element of conflict.
So that team is hugely identified with Jim Gavin. And I know there was a big backroom team there. And I know you had all the players who were involved in it talk about your role. The players that I've spoken to from that team talk about how instrumental you were in the whole setup. But in terms of selections, did you ever look at a selection of certain players on certain days and just fundamentally disagree with it?
Well, I was lucky that, like, I suppose I had a part in that process. And I think, again, selections of teams, selections of panels, they weren't folly, you know, they were very well taught, they were very well considered. And ultimately, it came down to what we felt was best for Dublin on any given day in terms of the challenge that we had in front of us, in terms of allowing Dublin to perform to the best of their ability, either starting the game or finishing the game. And that was the criteria. So it didn't really matter whether I disagreed or agreed. Ultimately, I respected, yeah, we're doing that for the betterment of the team on any given day. So, and again, yeah, I'm sure, I've no doubt we got things wrong. And again, I can go back, I can think back of games where we had to make substitutions early in games where we, in hindsight, we reflected upon it and we were much better prepared then for further team selection and panel selection. So, like, it was just embracing that challenge and taking the learnings from any given situation.
Who made was the substitution? Sorry, Oisin, just one more question on this. Who made the substitution decisions for Dublin? How were the decisions arrived at?
In a lot of ways, the decisions make themselves in terms of how a game is going and decisions tactically that need to happen. I suppose a bit like Oisin there, he's the headphones and the microphone. I think Porrick Joyce had two ear devices yesterday.
Yeah,
so I was lucky. We only really had myself, Decky and Jim. I only, even though we were in front of 82,000 people, they were the only kind of two voices I had to put up with. So, like all coaches, you have to take the data that you have. You have to kind of see what's going on tactically, but ultimately then you have to kind of make moves based on what you're seeing in front of you. And we were lucky that we kind of generally we got things right, and that the substitutions and tactics that were changed kind of added and improved performances over the years.
I was just thinking about the picking the panels when you were talking about that, Jason. There was never any emotion went into that from what I seen, you know, looking at the 26, because I was looking at a couple of teams where I thought, you know, Bernard Brogan was coming towards the end of his career and he'd been left out of a couple of panels. And I actually did, it wasn't an emotional thing for me, but I could see how people would see it as an emotional thing. And I just thought that maybe he could come on and do a job for you in some of those games. But obviously you guys knew more because you were watching him training. But was there ever any emotion went into that process?
You had to explore it. And part of it, when you talk about whether you should play a guy or you should put a guy in a panel, you have to talk the whole piece, the holistic piece. And obviously emotional is a big part, and particularly in our last year, 2019, because obviously it was an emotional year. No one had ever won five in a row, so it would be, we had to accept that was part of all our decisions in terms of what was going on. And like us all, we can all be guided by our hearts and we can all feel that we know what the right thing is to do. But that's going back to that kind of constructive conflict. It was great to be able to kind of challenge each other and question each other in terms of what our thoughts were, not why we're thinking it, but how you're coming to that decision. And certainly there were times, and like, believe me, there was more time spent on number kind of 20 to 26 a lot of the times than there was 1 to 15. And that's just the nature of a game. When you've got 36 guys bursting their ass like Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and they're not even going to get on a bus, you know, it's important that we pay enough respect and attention to who we choose in that regard. So, definitely, I suppose our ultimate, our criteria, our grounding was always what's best for Dublin in this situation. So I'd like to think when we did pick a panel, any panel, if you look back at it, it was based on the opposition in terms of the threat that they might have. And then obviously it was based on how we could have our best performance, and that was the criteria.
I see you went playing golf with Jim Gavin last month. What did you talk about?
We didn't talk about football anyway. That's one thing. It was good to catch up with Jim. Obviously, like all these things, you spend so much time with people, special people, and then life gets in the way again. So, he's been very busy work-wise. He's been playing a bit of golf, and he's invested a lot of his Dublin time with his family, which is great for him from a personal level. So, Jim was in good form. And, his golf has come on. I have to say, it's a lot harder to take that fiver off in these days.
You stalking these people, Paul?
Oh, yeah, I am. Yeah, I am. I have a surveillance network around the city. So What we do, Jason, every time during the championship is we look at the results of forthcoming matches. And Oisín had he had a brilliant league. He more or less called the league spot on.
I'm basically Armagh.
Yeah. So this week he.
Paul, before we go on to predictions, can you talk to me about Offaly, because we seem to have skirted over that one a little bit.
I suppose I find it hard to talk about Offaly because of knowing the lads who are in the panel, and I think it was really, really disappointing that the county was on, had momentum from last year, winning the under 20, and I think that's been squandered. I think promotion being relegated from Division 2 was a setback. I think the nature of the relegation in particular was a setback. I was thinking about this earlier. I think I'm really fortunate in the job I have. I love the job I have because it's teaching history and it's being involved in history, and it's based around evidence and it's based around facts and the analysis of evidence and of facts. And the basic facts are that Offaly lost, with all due respect to Wexford, the team that came third in Division 4 of the National Football League, and lost to that team yesterday. And that's the first point. The second point of it is Offaly only had 23 fit players togged out yesterday. They didn't have a sub goalie on the bench. They ended up with a lot of injuries. To be fair, they ended up with a lot of injuries, but it does not seem to me that that is the best team that Offaly can field, that the best players in the county are not in the field. And we've spoken a lot about this in over recent years, and we mentioned it, for example, in the context of Down. And in the context of Down have had some incredible number of players have been processed through the senior football team over the last couple of years. And I think Offaly had a very light panel yesterday, and that's not a good sign.
But even on that, Paul, and I mentioned it earlier about why would players commit and dedicate? They're asked to go slogging from October, November through the muck and all that kind of sacrifice their Christmas and all that to try and have a good league, when really this is the time of year you want our best, most talented footballers and hurlers playing the game that they love, you know. And it's such a shame that, as you say, all the good work, and Offaly are one example of numerous teams, Laois, another team that obviously wanted to have a great year. It's such a shame, in my opinion, that we're going to lose so much talent because the proposition isn't there. You know, why would these players do it? And I do think just a little tilt of the system and the structure will enhance the games. It'll allow our talent want to play a bit more and ensure that, listen, it's not going to be about one day in the sun. It's going to be about a journey that you're able to go with your county.
So I really, really fundamentally agree with that. I completely agree that the structure that has been introduced now simply doesn't work. The calendar of play doesn't work. And I do agree in large measure to create more windows for club football. I'm totally supportive of that. But the balance of games that are played in January and February makes a mockery to me of good qualities. And it's a totally different type of football. I would actually wonder as well, I was just thinking about this as well, there's a huge amount of football played in heavy ground. And I think this turn to people playing on hard ground, the ground seemed to me to harden up in about 10 days this year. It just went from being really boggy to being really hard. And I think a lot of the injuries that are going around at the moment are partly a consequence of that, for all the people talk about sports science. But it's the structures are not conducive to development. And the Tailteann Cup starts in 4 weeks' time. It goes into a knockout format. I'm really struggling to see how that's going to work for counties where losing in this week and last week is a real knock.
Yeah, I don't think the Tailteann Cup is the problem. I think it could be part of the solution. But I think we need as many teams and counties at the top table first before we kind of move. But again, I think where we're all coming from is we all care about Gaelic football and the sustainability of that. And it's just, I've been in a privileged position where we didn't have to knock on people's doors, players' doors, to come to training because they wanted to do it. But I've no doubt that is a challenge amongst a lot of counties, and it shouldn't be that way. Players should be able to inherently, intrinsically see the value of representing their county. But I would just question whether that's there at the moment, unfortunately.
I think that's right. And we're going to run through these predictions. Wexford, Dublin, Jason.
Dublin.
Oisín.
Dublin.
You're one for one. Meath, Wicklow in Navan.
Meath.
Kildare, Louth in Tullamore.
It'll be a good one, but I think Kildare, I hope Kildare are able to build on what they've shown this year.
Oisín, yeah. Kildare, Louth.
The in-laws probably don't listen to the podcast anyway because they hear enough from me, but they'll not be pleased. But I think Kildare, I think, you know, I've seen a good bit of Kildare this year in Division 1 and probably slightly unlucky and end up where they ended up. So I think Kildare should have a bit to spare.
And Westmead, Longford, Jason, which is in Mullingar.
I think home advantage is a big advantage in those type of games. What I've seen of Westmead over the last couple of years, I like what they're trying to do. So I'll go Westmead.
Okay, Monaghan down in Clonus.
That's me.
Yeah, sorry, Jason. Yeah, Monaghan down.
Yeah, I think if Monaghan can build on what they did in the league, particularly their last game, I'd go with Monaghan.
So, Oisín, I didn't ask you Westmead, Longford, and then Monaghan down.
Longford have a great ability of of turning the tables on the likes of Westmead, so I'll go for Westmead. Monaghan to beat down. The down thing doesn't seem to be going well at all. And that, like, as much as even what's going on behind the scenes, more so what's happening on the pitch, because they were really poor in a lot of those games. And the night that they played Galway, they never raised a gallop at all. So they have a couple of brilliant players. Young Andrew Gilmore has come in, done well, and Barry O'Hagan will kick points all day. The new fullback Callum, I can't remember his surname, but great fullback, but. Monaghan will have too much of them.
Oisín, are you working on Derry Tyrone at the weekend?
Yeah, looking forward to it.
I'm sure. I say you're absolutely hanging out for it. Who's going to win it?
I would have been really quiet. If you asked me this start of the league, halfway through the league, I think Derry have done themselves a bit of a favour with the way they finished the league in that. There's not as much talk about them beating Tyrone. They have a chance. They'll be very, very stubborn. Kieran McFaul is such a loss to them. Somebody who can kick points from distance. Somebody who can break that first line of defence. And he was very good last year, if you remember, against Donegal.
Yeah.
I think his loss is huge. But I think in general, it'll suit Derry in that they're probably not just as favoured as they were earlier in the year. But I just think Tyrone, I think the first game, normally in Ulster, when you get pulled out in the preliminary round, you just go, oh, no, nightmare. But I think Tyrone needed that game against Fermanagh. I think even in winning that game, they'll still have learned a good bit about themselves. A few players come back from injury. I think Tyrone will win with a couple of points.
And I'll ask you, Oisín, while you're there, Roscommon, Sligo.
Roscommon.
Jason, can I ask you about Roscommon, Sligo? Who do you think will win that one?
Yeah, I think the challenge for Roscommon is that they don't take their eye off the ball. I'm sure there's a lot of loose talk in Roscommon today, thinking we're now playing Galway, who we've beaten twice. So they're probably, that will be part of the challenge, is to keep their focus on what's in front of them. Obviously Sligo will be bringing a lot of spiritual, I suppose, motivation. And I just want to mention Red Ogies. I'm in DCU, so my thoughts were with the family and friends and club down there. And I'm sure, like their under 20s, they'll bring a lot of emotional positivity and energy with that. But certainly, yeah, I think if Roscommon can continue to keep grounded, there's no reason why Roscommon won't win that game.
Yeah, associate ourselves with those comments as well. And finally, the two Munster matches, Tip Waterford, Jason, and Clare Limerick. Tip Waterford and Clare Limerick.
Yeah, I suppose, like, just from what I know of Clare over the last number of years, they've done so well. I think they've punched far above their weight over the years. Obviously with the likes of Brennan and Tuberty. Brennan now moved on, but I'd probably have a bias to wanting Clare to win. I think Tip then, they've had a transitional period, obviously having the once you have a really high, I suppose you do get back more grounded to where your real level is. So again, I wouldn't see a whole lot in that game, but yeah, you would expect I'd expect Tipperary to get through.
Unser, Oisín, Tip, Waterford and Clare Limerick.
I'm going to go Limerick. Seen them a couple of times this year. I was impressed by them. And I'm going to go rogue on you, Paul. I'm going to go Waterford to beat Tipperary.
Sure. This is desperation stuff. So Jason, just to finish up, a one-word answer to this. Oisín's view is that Tyrone will win the All-Ireland. He thinks Tyrone are going to put back-to-back. A one-word answer, who do you think is going to win the All-Ireland?
Depends.
Okay, you may go more than one word. So
It depends. I think it's set up. I think it's great as a fan. I think there's so much in this championship. I think even looking at Donegal and Galway yesterday, they showed the level that they can get to. And I definitely think there's a lot of teams that feel they can. The one, obviously, the big one for me is Kerry. Can they deal with the, I suppose, the expectancy of winning an All-Ireland? Because to be fair, we've been here before over the last couple of years and they haven't performed to the level that they've been. And then obviously more closer to home, it's how Dublin respond to the adversity they've had over the last year or so. So that's why I think it depends.
Can't disagree with that statement. Thank you to Larry Ryan for running this podcast, to Raf Rocca, to Jack Neville, to Tony Lean, to everyone at Examiner Sport. A huge thanks to Oisín, and especially to Jason for joining us today. Thank you very much. We'll be back soon.
A grain, all right.
It's going to tip the scale. Just remember that.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Come on,
Mayo. You've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen,
tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.